from two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska. This is the Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Saib Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood Sibes on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto. We're hosting from the KVRF 89.5 studios in Palmer, Alaska tonight. Our show airs live on Wednesday nights at 5 p.m. here in Alaska, as well as on podcast and on the internet on dogworksradio.com. This week, we are talking to Dorothy Wills Raftery. She is the host of the show, The Side Vibe. Dorothy, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. How about yourself? Are you getting ready for the upcoming sledding season?
We are doing well, and yes, we are. We started fall training. It is very cool now. We're into the mid-20s in the morning and about 45, 50 degrees in the afternoon. So the dogs are ready to roll. They're barking and howling, and they cannot wait till we see some white stuff.
Oh, I bet. I know our guests today will probably fill us in a little bit because they've had some snow up there in Canada already. And unfortunately, as we all know, when it comes a little too soon, it can wreak some havoc on the trees and such. But I know the dogs are excited about it coming. And I have to tell you, Robert, I am too. I'm looking for the cooler weather this year. I really am. And your daughter, Nicole, she's going to be in the junior Iditarod this year. So I'm sure you're getting a lot of prep in for that, right?
We are. She's very excited. This will really be her last race as a junior. I don't know what's going to happen next year. She wants to go to college at the University of Alaska Southeast down in Juneau. While they do have some snow down there, it's an island here in Alaska where Juneau is. I believe it is the only capital besides Hawaii that is on an island. So it's pretty interesting to have her going off to college. I don't know if we're ready for that yet.
Oh, this will be an empty nest too then, right?
It will be an empty nest. So we will be calling very quickly to have them come back on the holidays, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. So want to jump into today, and speaking of school, it is September, and it's also back-to-school time in so many areas. And if folks are thinking about sending their Husky or Malamute to puppy kindergarten or school for behavior, agility, or therapy dog training, this is the show for you. You know, if you often wondered about the behaviors of a northern breed dog or why your Husky is a picky eater, again, this is the show for you. So let's polish up those apples because the teacher's in the house today and class is now in session. During this hour, Robert and I will be chatting with the snow dog guru, Margaret Maxwell, who hails from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and Margaret shares her home with her herd of two Siberian Huskies, Kaya and Angel, and an Alaskan Malamute, Skylar, and she also has two rescue cats, Bailey and Luna. She notes, "Gratefully, my dogs did not read the memo regarding how snow dogs and cats cannot exist under the same roof. Everyone gets along here just fine, with proper supervision and training, of course." Margaret's love for the northern breed dog started over 30 years ago, and her first Siberian Husky was Misty. And looking back now, she said she realizes that she knew nothing about what to look for in a Husky and trained her through complete trial and error. She says Misty was such a good sport about overlooking and forgiving her ignorance and ineptness. And in retrospect and fair comparison, Margaret says she now realizes that for a Husky, Misty really was exceptionally well-trained. The problem was that she kept comparing Misty's progress and performance to those of sporting breeds who were genetically bred to serve and please their owners. While living in a small, remote northern town, Margaret joined a small group of people who trained and showed their dogs. They practiced obedience training in the local high school gym every Wednesday evening, and she says she often stood scratching her head wondering why her husky was such a renegade, while the other dogs seemed so quick to please their handlers. She very quickly discovered that huskies seldom check in with their owners and to ask them, "What can I do to please you today?" Margaret says they really don't care if you are happy with their performance or not. They only care about what is in it for them. Is there running involved? And is it huge amounts of husky fun? After much reading and research into the breed, Margaret says she figured out that when it comes to most northern breed dogs, one-size-fits-all training really fails in with these beautiful but independent-thinking dogs. Standard training techniques that are adequate for many other breeds of dogs are dismal failures when trying to train huskies and malamutes. It was at this time that she also became aware of the special needs that these breeds had, not just in their training requirements, but also in their nutritional requirements, including special issues that frequently plague these breeds, such as zinc deficiency and malabsorption as the source for seizures. Their higher than average zinc requirements and their need for grain-free diet. And we're going to be talking more about that a little bit later on. This information disconnect, she says, is what prodded her to not only learn as much as she could about these dogs, but also to learn about how best to meet their unique needs. And so began her many years of studying and learning about the northern breed dogs. The end result of all the study was a wide variety of what she calls quote, paper, unquote, on her walls, not only from the field of classical dog training, but also in psychology, animal sciences, alternative medicine, energy medicine, and many alternative healing modalities. Margaret says, when you string all of the learning together, it allows you to see and address the issues of dog training, dog behavior, dog health and nutrition, and even people's behavior and attitude with their dogs. She says she wants to make this information readily available for other snow dog owners so that they do not have to spend 30 years of their lives searching for it. She also says she desperately wants to make life better for dogs by giving their owners good tools and information. And she says far too many of these beautiful dogs end up being dumped off at shelters because people did not research the needs of the breed before getting the dog. And then once they had the dog, they had no clue about how best to train these highly independent thinking and hard to motivate dogs. Without further delay, Margaret, welcome to the Side Vibe.
Thank you, Dorothy.
First, before our class starts, I was wondering if you can maybe just tell us a little bit about what made you first chose to welcome Misty, a Siberian Husky, into your family, and why a northern breed dog?
Well, we live in Canada, so having a northern breed dog makes sense up here because we do spend a lot of our time in the snow and in the cold, and like everybody else, when you look into those beautiful husky eyes, you fall in love with the breed right away. So I was no different than anybody else in that respect.
So true. I guess that's why they call it the potato chip syndrome, right?
Pretty much. Now you know why I have more than one.
You have more than one, and so do I. And I think Robert has his team of 30. So we're
go.
All in good company. Now, you currently have two huskies and a Malamute. And can you tell us, how did a Malamute enter the picture?
Well, he wasn't exactly planned on it. Just sort of happened. We had three Siberian huskies, and I lost my beautiful boy to a massive cluster seizure, and we were just down to the two dogs. And I was heartbroken because the whole thing happened rather fast, and there was really no closure or time to say goodbye. And through some mutual friends,
right?
Yeah, yes. And through mutual friends, we met this wonderful breeder, a local breeder who mostly shows their Malamutes, and they happened to have a litter of puppies on the ground. And they heard of what happened to us, and they asked if I would be interested in coming to help them socialize their puppies. And they called it puppy therapy. Come for puppy therapy, they said. So I did, and we spent several weeks coming to their place to just basically play and handle the puppies. And then I fell in love with these beautiful, beautiful dogs. And so we, after careful consideration, one of the puppies was going to be a cull because of a minor dental. He had a bit of an overbite, nothing horrible, but it's not what they want in the show rink. So he looked at me as a good candidate. We took Skylar into our home, and then a whole bunch of doors opened for me. I was running puppy classes, puppy obedience classes there at the kennel for his dogs that were staying in town. He's asked me to become active with the Malamute Association and write articles for them, much as I do on my own site. And it's just opened a whole bunch of new doors. So now my herd is diverse, and we have Siberian Huskies and Malamutes.
And Malamutes. Now, some folks do mix up the two breeds, the Siberian Husky and the Malamute. And while they're both northern breeds and are considered cousins, can you talk about the main physical differences between the two?
The best way to describe it is Siberian Huskies, just knowing what they were bred for. Siberian Huskies were born to run quickly. They carry lighter loads, run fast, and run for a long time. They're built lighter, and that's what their job is. The Alaskan Malamutes were built much heavier. They are a draft dog that is meant to carry heavier weight. They don't move as quickly as the Siberian Huskies do, but both dogs are northern breed dogs, and both are bred to pull sleds.
Now, with regards to training, who do you find to be more challenging, the Siberian Husky or the Malamute or both, and how so?
They are just about the same. They both have that northern breed mentality where they are not bred as a companion dog to say, what can I do to please you today? What do you need help with? They're bred to run. So it makes training them a little bit more difficult because they're harder to motivate. They're very smart. They're not hard to train, hard to motivate. The Siberian Huskies are bouncier, and you have a harder time keeping all 4 feet on the ground. The Malamutes are larger. They're heavier. They don't bounce as much, but they're stronger. So that makes for problems when they become willful, and now you're trying to muscle this dog into a, no, really, I want you to sit. So it's very close to the same problems.
I'm actually laughing, as I'm sure quite a few of our listeners are too, when you say bouncy, because I'm picturing my one, we call her the flying monkey, Bandit, because she usually she has 4 feet somewhere up in the air, and when 20 paws are on the ground healthy, because as a lot of people know, I've been going through surgery and Gibson's had some hind end issues,
right.
But when 20 paws are running on the ground, her four are usually up and she body surfs the other Huskies because they do not move fast enough for her. So I just get this vision when you were talking about bouncing. I'm going, yep, that's exactly
The mouth just can't spring quite that high into the air, but they just bowl through everything because they're so much larger. So
out
it's
of my
really
way.
Not a problem for them.
Now, as also my parents know about those many quote-unquote unique traits a Husky has, such as being super independent, a bit stubborn, too smart at times, which can lead them to becoming easily bored, especially in a classroom-type setting. My one boy, Wolf, was quite the student. And I'm not saying that's complimentary. He and his sister Chloe had gone into obedience classes together, and they're both pure white Huskies and quite vocal, especially Chloe. She's our resident crier. She cries for everything. She cries hello. She cries goodbye. She cries to eat. She cries the entire car ride, no matter where you're going. She cries when she gets there, the whole time she's there. So she's our resident crier. And she cried through class, of course, every week for 6 weeks. Wolf caught on quick to all the lessons, and he performed them on command perfectly the first time he was asked. After that, he sat and stared and howled, and they were quite the comedians of the class. And, you know, of course, my daughter and I are there trying to be like, okay, come on, guys, come on. And our instructor, she was quite familiar with Huskies, and it was funny because she said that he felt he didn't have to perform the command again because in his mind he had already learned it, performed it, and basically was like, bored now, what else do you have? So just how true is that with a Husky, and how often will a Husky learn something and then be stubborn about doing what he learned repetitiously?
The things that Huskies detest the most is tedium. And when you ask them to repeat something, when you're trying to teach them something, they become bored so quickly. What it comes down to is, in order to work with them, you have to make the exercise varied so that you have to look at how many ways can I actually work on this skill without going through the exact same steps. And you have to have something in it for them. because the very best quote that I love comes from a behaviorist. Her name is Suzanne Clothier, and she said, "If you could look inside the head of a dog when you issue it a cue, the regular sporting breed dogs, you could see that the process of how they respond to a cue is you give them a cue, they think about it, and their response is, sure, why not, I'll do it. If you could look into the head of a northern breed dog and follow the same process when they're given a cue, what you would see is their thought process is you give them the cue and they go, why should I? And the only acceptable answer for them is because I can make it fun for you, to which they will respond, okay, but you better, or I'm out of here and I will find my own fun. So basically, we have to make learning fun, and we have to make it worth their while. That's where high-value treats come in, and if you have a dog who is food-motivated, then you're very lucky because you at least have that. If they're not food-motivated, you're really stuck because basically you're stuck trying to find something that will make it worth their while to say, do this, and I will do this for you.
Well, I guess we're lucky because Huskies are pretty food motivated. At least I know my five are.
I have one who's not.
Oh, really? Okay.
And has made training really, really hard. I have a rescue, Angel, and she really doesn't care if she gets treats or not, no matter how high value they are. What she values is social time. So I actually, for her, had to take something off the table for her in order to say, you do this, and you can go and socialize. If you don't do it, then I'm leashing you up to me, and you're stuck with me. And she went, that's no fun. And I went, yes, that's the point. So do what I ask, and then you can socialize.
Now, what are some other tips to get a husky to work around that board stubbornness? I mean, that's really great to know because, I mean, my guys, like I said, are food motivated. Wolfie's a little more reluctant. He likes to be the first one. If you don't go to him first, he kind of gives you a little snub. But by the time you work your way back around the second time with the treats, they're all sitting, and sometimes Harley will pull out every trick she knows and just does it before I even, like, get the treat out of the bag. And
is
Wolfie's
it this? Is it this?
Like,
is it this? Hurry up,
yep,
give me the treat.
Yeah, exactly. Roll over, sit up. What do you want to speak? You know, and meanwhile, Wolfie's just like, you didn't do me first. And so what are some other tips to get a husky? You talked about the high value treats, you know, to get them to work around this board stubbornness so that we can get them to repeat action and command and learn them.
Well, like I said, rather than that strict give a cue and make them respond, find creative ways to make it fun. Make it into a real game. Make it into a contest. Make sure that your treats that you're using are a high-value treat for anybody who may not know what that means. In order for this treat to have a value, it has to be something that cannot be gotten at any other time in any other way except in training, and it has to be extremely yummy for it to carry a weight. If they can get it doing at any other time, then all of a sudden this no longer carries the same weight. So make sure that your high-value treats are very high value. And then basically, too, is with Huskies, you have to keep training time really short. So basically, you can't do a marathon session with them because that you will lose them in the first 10 minutes, and they will say, forget this, I'm not doing this anymore. So break it up into small sections. Whenever I teach classes I like to teach classes to all Huskies and Malamutes because that way we're kind of all on the same plane. So we'll do, say, 5 minutes of practicing a new skill, then break it up into a game, and then do something else, and then come back, and you can practice it for 5 more minutes, add another dimension to it, and that basically keeps them going. It has to be fun, or they're not doing it.
Great, great tips. Now, I know on your website you talk about aversive training and positive reinforcement training. What is the difference between the two?
Basically, we see a trend these days as we learn and grow as trainers. We have moved away from harsher forms of training. If you take a look at how trainers trained, say, 30 years ago, it was all based on sort of harsh do this because I said so. If you don't do it, there was leash jerks, and it was almost a punishment-based thing. So if you don't do what I say, then you're going to get a punishment for not doing it. These days, we like to move to, you know, positive reinforcement training, which means that we look for the behavior that we want, and when the dog produces it, you reward that with a high-value treat. Aversive training would be anything that uses harsh, usually physical, almost a punishment, instead of just rewarding the training. Aversive training basically says, if you do this, this is what's going to happen to you as a punishment. And as a reward, you produce the behavior, and you say yes, you mark it, and you give them a treat, and basically you reward the positive. That's the biggest difference between the two of them.
Now, you also talk about fade the lure in positive reinforcement training. Can you explain a little bit to our listeners exactly what that's about?
You betcha. When we're working with those high-value treats, that is the lure. And a lot of people get stuck in the idea of using a treat to train a dog, and then they complain that the training isn't working because unless they have a treat in their hand, the dog won't produce the behavior. It's not that the system is flawed, it's they have done it incorrectly. In order to have treat training or positive reward system work, you actually have to do something called fade the lure. And the reason that we do that is so that the dog isn't just simply doing it because you have a treat in your hand. How the system is meant to work is with a treat in your hand, for the first, probably no more than the first six repetitions of teaching a new behavior, should you have food in your hand. And you actually use the food to lure the dog into position. So if you were teaching your dog or a puppy to sit, you would take the food in your fingers, have it right in front of them, and you move it from the floor up past their nose and head, the head tips back and the bum goes down, and as soon as that bum hits the floor, you say, good, sit, and then you give them the treat and you've marked it. After the dog understands the correlation of sit and bum on the floor, you actually need to stop rewarding every single time and start rewarding intermittently so the dog doesn't know when it's going to get a treat. Eventually, you phase out the treat and the dog works for reward and the word good.
Now,
luring also helps because it becomes the hand signal that you use to train.
Mm-hmm.
So you move to moving that hand minus the food and having the dog follow your hand.
So you've got their attention.
You bet.
Excellent.
And that's the difference. When you do it that way, then you don't have that problem where the dog will only perform the behavior as long as you have food in your hand.
Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Husky and recall. We have many readers who are new to the breed of Siberian Husky, and one thing that we do hear often is that folks want to teach their Husky to run off lead like other family dogs. And while there are some folks who seem to have successfully done this, generally it's not a good practice to have a Husky off leash unless they're in a dog park, a safely enclosed dog park.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about why Huskies should not be let off the leash and other dogs can be? And what about Huskies in agility classes? Because again, you know, you're letting them go. Can it work?
It can work. The reason that you don't see a lot of Huskies in agility classes is because it takes a very special kind of Husky who will really love doing this work and will do it for you. I practice recall, off-leash recall with my guys all the time. We drill it, because it's important for them to have it. Do I trust that 100% of the time that their recall will be good? No, I'm not that stupid. Honest, all it takes is a piece of paper, a leaf blowing, a bird flying overhead. One time we had, I don't know why this rabbit actually had to dig its way under the fence to get into a fenced dog park full of dogs. And when it realized where it was, it ran. And guess where my Husky was? Following that rabbit.
Following the rabbit.
Only thing that stopped her was that fence because it was a fully fenced dog park. These dogs have a high prey drive and basically are reactive dogs. And it just takes that one time for them to go after something. And between getting lost and running out into traffic, It is simply not worth it. Even if your dog has come back every time you've called it, that's great. It means you've worked on developing a recall. But should you trust it 100%, is it really worth it?
No, never.
Nope.
Now, Huskies are high-energy dogs, and it's in their blood. We know that. Can you talk about just what exactly does that mean, especially to a newbie Husky parent?
A lot of people run into problems when it comes to their dogs because they really do not understand how much energy these dogs have. These are working dogs, and when they live in our homes, they tend not to have a job, but they have the stamina and that drive to want to work and to need to run, and often they don't have any place to channel that energy. So these dogs are not your lap dogs. They're not your couch potato dogs. They're not the dog that's, you know, happy to lay on the floor and sleep for hours unless they've had enough exercise. So the people who get these dogs need to know that this is going to be a dog that you can't just take for a walk for 15 minutes and they're good to go for the rest of the day. They have to have regular, vigorous, what I call breed-appropriate, and specific exercise to drain this energy. I usually say that you better be prepared to walk this dog daily and to make time to take this dog to an off-leash dog park at least once a week to be able to get rid of the rest of the excess energy that you can't get rid of by walking a dog. So they have to know that this is what they're getting with a Husky. And if they're not that kind of person, if they themselves are couch potatoes or they don't like being out in the cold, then this dog is not for you.
And they will get that energy out. And we have an open yard for ours, so they have free roam, free digging. They have free digging rights. And I always say that half, you know, I have to ask for permission to go in because, you know, it's like Fort Husky. You know, we have the six-foot, stockade fence, and we have the rocks around it, and we have railroad ties driven into concrete. I mean, we really thought this fence out.
That's right.
And they are also we gave up half of our deck to them, so they're up high. And, you know, if they, for some reason, if it's raining and, you know, they really get lazy and they're on, you know, hanging out in the deck, when they come in, they will get the zoomies. And it will be furniture bouncing, dogs sliding through the, I mean, you're so right. One way or another, they have to get that energy out because as soon as this starts, and usually it's Bandit, our flying monkey, who starts it, and then it's like, whoa, and then quick, everybody knows, step back, open the gate, open the back door, you know, and try to, you know, scooch them back out to let them do their running before they come back in.
And there are times where you can just expect that they're going to be sillier, and when the weather suddenly gets cold, that revs them up, so know that, expect it, they're going to get crazy, and they're doing zoomies because it's cold out and they're happy.
And they're happy, and that is a great point, especially going into this time of year, you know, here in the Northeast. I mean, we're going into autumn. You know, you guys already have had some snow.
We've had some, it's gone, but it will be back.
So there is a change in the dogs. They know it. So it's good, like you said, for people to be aware that, you know, they're going to have even an extra little burst of happiness, which equals energy.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we've had people write in saying that while they're away at work or school, their Huskies have torn up sofas and ripped up bedding so much that it looks like it's snowed stuffing in their room. Their hidden trash receptacles were found and garbage was eaten, sprawled, regurgitated over the house. And some people have had lovely wooden bookshelves that now sport a new look that consists of what I call modern scratching and a little ancient chewing tossed in. What would you suggest to a Husky parent who came to you with this situation on how to help prevent it from occurring again?
Well, there's a number of things that you need to do. First of all, remember what kind of dog that you have. And they really don't care what your schedule is and how busy you are at work or how late you had to work. All they know is they have exercise requirements and they need to be met. So if you know that you have to go to work that day, one of the better things that you can do is to get up extra early, take them for a good long walk or a run if you can, and in the morning, and get that energy out of them in the morning. Then set them up for success by making sure that they have something to do while you're away. Most dogs are bored, and they look at something, and they think, that looks like fun, I'll try that. And there's nobody there to tell them no. So that's a really good time to be able to use things like special chews that they only get when you've gone. Mine get their antlers in their crates, and they actually look forward to it. It's like, woohoo, it's antler chewing time. frozen filled Kongs, because it takes a long time to get those out, and it keeps them very busy. So that's a good thing to give them when you know that you're going to be away. You can leave a radio or a TV on for them, so it's not quite so quiet in the house. Not giving them the run of the house is actually a really good idea. So whether you crate them or you make the area smaller, just run around and ruin things is kind of the best way to do it. But mostly to know what you're getting into with these dogs. Can't just leave them for hours and hours. If you have somebody can come in, too, halfway through the day to let them out or hire a dog walker, and then when you get home, make sure that they go for a really good run. These dogs do really well with a schedule. So if you know, if they know what to expect, they're less likely to be anxious about your not being there. So if you keep to a tight schedule where they know they get a walk before you go, somebody's going to come in and let them out to pee, then you come home, and then it's fun time again, they're more likely to be okay with the waiting because they know that fun time's coming.
You know, actually, I like that, and I think that's an excellent motto. Set them up for success.
Yes.
So many times people say, oh, the dog's crazy, or oh, the dog's a bad dog, and that's not true.
Nope.
You set them up for success, you're going to have a good experience. So I like that. That's a great motto. I think that any Husky owner, I think we're owned by the Huskies, so any Husky parent should keep that in mind. It's a great thing to, you know.
I call it operator error. When these things happen, it's usually because somebody didn't meet the dog's needs.
Excellent point. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Side Vibe on DogWorks Radio, and today we're chatting with the Snow Dog Guru, Margaret Maxwell, and you can follow Margaret on her Facebook page, Snow Dog Guru Husky Training and Advice, and that's Snow Dog Guru, G-U-R. You, and it's one word, and that's located at www.facebook.com/snowdogguru, and she also has an educational website over at www.snowdog.guru, G-U-R-U, and she shares many wonderful and informative articles and videos on training tips, healthcare, nutrition, and a lot of other information for your northern breed dog. I will also have her information posted on my Five Sides blog at fivesides.blogspot.com and over on DogWorks Radio at dogworksradio.com, and look through the tab for our show, The Side Vibe. Now, Margaret, we dig huskies, and huskies dig digging. How much digging can a digging husky dig?
Unbelievable amounts, especially if they're bored. Usually the biggest problem is that people, again, are not meeting the exercise and the mental stimulation needs of the dog. When they are understimulated and under-exercised, they're bored and they start looking for things to do. If they see earth, they're going to want to dig in it. And a lot of them are really great diggers. They can actually take your backyard and make it look like a lunar scape. there's so many holes. Sometimes if you make sure that they have enough exercise, they won't dig as much because a tired husky is a good husky. Sometimes they just really need to dig. Sometimes they like to dig pits and lie in them because they're nice and cool. So give them adequate cool shade somewhere else and maybe they won't dig a pit. And if they really, really just need to dig, and many of them do, you know what? Don't fight it. Instead, give them a digging pit.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get like a plastic swimming pool, something, a hard-sided plastic pool, fill it up with sand or dirt, and say, dig here. As a matter of fact, you can actually bury stuff in there so they can find it. It's like a treasure hunt. And that way you can redirect their digging to where they don't get themselves into so much trouble.
Great suggestion. I like the idea of filling a kiddie pool with the sand. That's a great idea.
Yeah, or just make a sandbox for them.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's all it needs to do.
I know on our side of the yard, you know, we give them digging privileges in this one particular part. And they dig a crater big enough for the five of them. I dub it Husky Beach because all five of them lay in there, and they're quite happy. And it's okay because that's nowhere near anything that I'm worried about. They're happy, I'm happy. But
yeah,
if people don't have a lot of space, I think that's such an excellent idea. Get a kiddie pool or even one of those turtle sandboxes or build one and fill it. Great tip. Thank you, Margaret. Just as new parents child-proof a house, I believe Husky parents need to Husky-proof their house as well. And it really is for their own safety. Margaret, can we talk a little bit about the Houdini Husky? Just how apt is a Husky at getting out of doors or opening cabinets and, opening up like even back doors, front doors? They can turn doorknobs, gates, crates, yards, fences, the whole shebang.
They are unbelievably adept at getting out, and it's worse when they're under-exercised and under-stimulated because they go looking for an adventure. If you don't provide it for them, they'll go looking for it. Numerous people have lost Huskies because they have learned how to bounce the doorknob and it flies open on the front door. Things that we can do to prevent that is to, A, teach them that an open door doesn't mean they get to walk through it. My guys, I always teach them that they actually have to be in a sit with the door open until I say let's go. So that helps a little bit. Having hook and eyes on doors up near the top so it can't be bounced open is helpful for front doors. Or even with little children who like to leave doors open, that can work too as a hook and eye so they can't just open the door. You literally have to think about the configuration of your house and making sure that they can't open a cupboard that has, say, cleaning products or something in it. If you have to, you're going to actually end up getting child-proof locks on your doors to make sure that they can't open them just because they are that smart. The biggest problem that people have is fences. Again, if the dogs are under-exercised and under-stimulated, they're going to look at that fence as a challenge to get either under it or over it. So the best kind of fencing, you have to pay attention to what kind of fencing you have. It has to be as high as you can make it, because especially Sibes, they will jump 5 feet into the air, no problem. Make sure that the boards are running vertically and not horizontally, because horizontally gives you a bit of a toe hold and it makes it easier to climb the fence. So boards that run up and down makes it harder for them to climb. The best idea I've seen to keep dogs from going over a fence is something called a coyote fence. And what it is it's a roller it's a PVC pipe that rolls freely on a smaller dimension pipe at the very top of the fence. And what happens is when the dog reaches the top and puts his paw up to grab the top of the fence, it rolls and they lose their grip and they can't get over the fence. They can either make them yourself using PVC pipe and a smaller diameter pipe, or you can actually buy them, and then they're installed in each fence panel. Underneath, you have to have concrete, or because they will dig under any fence. So you have to have either paving stone or concrete or something that they cannot burrow under. Otherwise, they're going to be Houdini dogs and they're going to be gone.
And again, that's called coyote fence, and that's a PVC pipe. Okay, great suggestion.
If you look that up on the internet, you'll actually see basically what they look like, and they're very, very easy to make. It just takes a larger diameter PVC pipe that rolls on a smaller diameter, usually a metal pipe, and they just can't get the paw up there because it rolls.
Now, what about Malamutes? How are they with fences and yards? Do they share in this escape artist trait as well?
They're not as light, so they can't scale a fence quite as easily as a Siberian can. If it's a chain-link fence and it's easy to get a toe hold, then you might see a Malamute going over the fence. What they lack in agility and nimbleness, they make up for in power. They'll go through a fence. They'll just chew a hole through the fence, or they ram it with their shoulder, and there's so much weight behind them that they'll take the fence board right off. So what they lack in nimbleness, they just make up for in power, and they'll just go through it.
Now, how are Siberian Huskies and Malamutes as family dogs?
For the right owner and for the right family, you could not picture a better dog. Both of my children came home from the hospital to a Siberian Husky. I never, ever, ever had a problem of any kind. But you have to have an owner who is dedicated to exercising this dog, socializing this dog, and basically giving this dog obedience training so it can be in the house with your family. It has to be part of the family. These dogs do not do well relegated to the backyard because, you know, they might shed and put hair on the furniture or whatever. They won't do well there. They love people, which is why these dogs were bred. They were actually bred to be in the houses with the children. And you cannot just exclude them from the family or they won't do well.
Now, just so our listeners know, we're not trying to scare anyone away from the breed. They are wonderful, amazing, loving dogs. But folks who are not familiar with the breed, as Margaret was saying, really need to understand the importance of doing their research and having an understanding that a husky is quite different than having another breed of dog. And, you know, I have five huskies, and I've had many, many other breeds and mixed breeds throughout my life. And, excuse me, huskies are definitely independent thinkers who are extremely smart, and they have that capacity to carry out a plan, and they do it with such extreme speed and agility. They can also be talkers and quite the howlers at times. Two of the traits I actually dearly love, but an unsuspecting person may be taken aback by their vocals. And also in their excitement, they not only dig, as we were talking about, body size and lunar size holes and chew up almost anything, including a wall, and they can also escape and happily run for miles before realizing that they've become lost. These traits also sadly result in people deciding that they're too, quote, untrainable, uncontrollable, noisy, wild, crazy, and they drop them off at shelters because that cuteness that initially caught their eye wore off. Some breed education and a few training tips for a parent can go a really long way for a long, happy, healthy, and safe relationship with a Siberian Husky. Margaret, when someone who is not familiar with a Siberian Husky says that, oh, Huskies are so beautiful, I love their eyes, I want one, what are some of the key things they should be aware of before committing to bring that Husky home?
Research. Do the research so that you understand what these dogs are about and what their needs are. And then you have to be realistic. You have to have a realistic plan, a sustainable plan to meet these needs. People only look in the short term of, oh, of course we'll walk the dog and, you know, we'll do this. And then all of a sudden it's 6 months later and people are tired of it and there is no backup plan. So you got to know what you're getting into, what their needs are. You got to know that they are going to have a high exercise requirement. They don't care if you had to work overtime. They don't care if it's raining or it's, you know, minus 35 Celsius outside. They need their exercise. And if you are not the type of person that likes to do that, then this dog is not for you. Know that they like to dig and they like to chew. So be ready to give them surfaces to chew on. They love to run. So basically, be ready to take them to a fenced dog park every week so that they can get their running requirement. Know that they have a high prey drive. So having small pets, other small pets, or even sometimes small children, it's not the best mix. They have to be socialized to people, to other dogs. Otherwise, they don't know how to get along. If people are aware and realistic, then they can decide for themselves whether they can meet these needs or not. If you do that, you won't have any surprises.
And while we're talking about that, we should really talk about a husky's coat. You know, a lot of people ask, do they shed? Which I think almost every husky parent will probably chuckle because usually you could shed another husky. So I'd like to kind of talk about a husky and their coat. And also, too, I know people have an urge to shave it when it's hot out. And, you know, of course, we always say never shave a husky unless it's for medical reasons.
Right.
Margaret, I'm going to let you explain a little bit about the husky coat and why a husky should never be shaved and also if this applies to a Malamute.
Yes, all northern breed dogs, actually this applies to. Northern breed dogs have something called a double coat. So they have this soft, woolly undercoat that's shorter that helps to keep them warm, and then they have their longer guard hair coats that are very weatherproof and waterproof that kind of go over on top of the woolly coat. they shed out this woolly undercoat. That's the stuff that we brush out nonstop through spring through fall. Once that undercoat is off of them, then they just have the exterior guard hairs. And those guard hairs actually form an air pocket between their skin and the sunshine. And it's that air pocket that helps to actually keep them cool in the summertime so they can tolerate a certain amount of heat. If you shave the husky, you took away their mechanism for keeping cool, and you've now subjected them to sunburn. So it is counterproductive to shave them. It will not help them feel cooler. It will make them feel more hot.
Now, what are some grooming and bathing tips also for the thick northern breed coats?
Luckily, that we get a little bit of a break just because we have to brush them so much. It makes up for, we don't have to bathe them so often. These northern breed dogs tend to have no doggy odor that you would normally see with many of the other breeds because they don't have the same kind of oily coat. They love to snow bathe, so a lot of times they take care of the problem themselves. They really don't need a bath unless they've rolled into something very smelly, or about once a year or so to give them a bath is not a bad idea. To groom them, all you need to do is, in non-shedding season, once a week with a good brush that gets down to where the skin is enough to get the odd stray hair. When they're shedding, you're talking about daily brushing. You need to use something called an undercoat rake, which is a sparse tooth rake that gets down past the guard hairs into the woolly undercoat and starts to pull it out. And you need to pull that coat out, the dead hair out, so that the skin can breathe, and then it'll be ready to grow in the hair for the next season. And that's endless, as you know. It's like living in a snow globe during shedding season. It's no matter how much you brush them, there's always more to come. So okay. I find that using a rake for the undercoat, using a pin brush, and even using a furminator, but use the right furminator. I hear people say, "Oh, it's terrible! It cuts the fur." No, it doesn't. There's two kinds of furminators: one for short hair, one for a longer hair. If you use the one for a longer hair, it doesn't cut the coat, but you shouldn't overwork the coat with it.
That's good to know, because we do hear that quite a bit. You know, you do hear that controversy of what some people love it and other people are like, don't use it. So thank you for clarifying that.
I have a photo on my site that I actually put up. And I actually, Kaya is a black and white husky. I raked out using a furminator. There is not one single black hair in there. It's all undercoat. So if it cuts guard hairs, then why is there no guard hairs in the fur that I pulled out?
All right. Now, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio. And today we're chatting with the Snow Dog Guru, Margaret Maxwell. And you can follow Margaret on her Facebook page, Snow Dog Guru Husky Training and Advice. And that's located at www.facebook.com/Snow Dog Guru. And that's DOGGURU. And also on her educational website at www.snowdog.guru, where she shares many wonderful and informative articles, videos, and as she said, photos. And that's on training tips, health care, and nutrition for your northern breed dog. Both Robert and I will also have her information posted on the dogworksradio.com and my fivesides.blogspot.com. And Margaret, before we move on, because I have some questions from some of our listeners, I want to make sure I get in before we close out the hour. But I did want to talk a little bit, briefly about your beautiful boy, Jet, who is an epi dog, which is a canine epileptic for any of those who are not familiar with the term. And, you had mentioned to me that your first dog, your first husky, Misty, also had seizures.
Yes.
And as a lot of our listeners know, of course, that this is a topic near and dear to my heart because, we really do work hard for the canine epilepsy awareness through the Live, Give Strong campaign. And I naturally just wanted to ask you about the huskies and seizures. And I know there's some things that you said you've learned along the 30 years between Misty and Jet in relation to seizures, epilepsy treatment, and you've written a lot about zinc deficiency and its relationship to seizures. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
You bet. When I when I had my first dog and she had seizures, I didn't know anything about epilepsy in huskies. When she had her first seizure at about age 4, took her to the vet. I was scared to death. He said she had an epileptic seizure, gave me phenobarbital. I gave her phenobarbital, and she actually never had any more seizures after that. So I thought, well, that was easy. I only realize now, in retrospect, how lucky I was, because that isn't always the case for dogs. It isn't always completely controllable by medication. So that led me to believe, when Jet started having seizures at only 14 months old, I was floored. I couldn't understand why he was having seizures. You take him to the vet, and the vet says, yep, he has seizures. If they start to become regular, you put him on medication. I didn't understand what is it that makes them predisposed to it, because a vet will tell you that epilepsy, there is no genetic marker for it specifically, yet it seems to run in certain lines, and the huskies seem to be predisposed to it. So what is it that makes them predisposed? I decided to make it my mission to find out. And it took many months of study of comparing notes and looking at what experienced breeders had to say, and I started to see a picture start to emerge. And it seems that zinc plays a very significant part in epilepsy in northern breed dogs, and a lot of the giant breed dogs have the same problem too, I found out. And what happens is zinc is the second most utilized mineral in the body, and it's needed for a host of body processes. And zinc cannot be stored in the body. So that means every single day, this zinc stores need to be replenished because there's no way of storing them. And as the zinc is used in the body processes, there's a hierarchy in how it's used in the body. And at the end of the line of body processes daily is zinc necessary for taurine uptake. And taurine in the brain acts as a neurotransmitter smoother over. And if you run out of zinc before all the body processes are completed, then some go without. And the longer they go without zinc, the more of an imbalance that you have. So now you have a husky who doesn't have enough zinc, who now the neurons, the neurotransmitters start firing like crazy erratically, and you end up with a dog who has seizures. I found out that there are several problems with zinc. You can have not enough zinc in the diet, which is fixable by making sure there's enough zinc in the diet. But you also have zinc malabsorption, meaning you have enough zinc, but the dog's system cannot take it up. Either way, you end up with a zinc deficiency. One thing I found is that dogs, northern breed dogs, who are fed a diet with grains in it, that means especially wheat, corn, or soy, when those grains are digesting, they create something called a phytic acid, and phytic acid binds to the zinc that's in the body, making it more unavailable. So our dogs do not do well with a grain-based diet, and we also need to make sure that we feed many of the foods that are high in zinc so that the dog has a constant daily supply of adequate zinc so they don't run out in these body processes. And sometimes you can actually avert this seizure-like behavior by making sure that there's adequate zinc.
Those are excellent points, and so if anyone wants to look more into that, they should really talk to their veterinarian and find out what their dog's zinc levels are, and this is definitely something that I think would be very important for every dog parents to definitely look into. We have about 7 or 8 minutes left, and mm-hmm. Margaret, we have some questions from the readers, so I'm just going to kind of start going right through them.
You bet.
How do I get my husky to stop jumping on guests when they arrive?
A lot of understand and expect that a dog is going to be bouncy because Siberians are bouncy. You have to make sure that you show the dog what to do and what not to do and what to do instead of. So when the dog rushes up to the person, first of all, take away the availability, put a leash on the dog so that they can't go running up to a person. So when the person comes in, instead of jumping on the person, this is a good time to teach dog to go to place, which means instead of jumping on the person, I want you to go lie down on this mat until this person has a chance to come in. And then when you're done then you can call the dog over, and then you can pet the dog. Not make a big fuss over a dog when you come in also helps to not have this excitement of, ooh, a new person in the house.
Okay. Now, another person writes in, two of my huskies, one boy and one girl, mark territory in the house, almost like a competition. How can I get them to stop?
This usually happens because of the marking is about social hierarchy. This is marking saying, I was here. Usually this happens in dogs who are not spayed and neutered. So a good one to do is to spay and neuter your dogs so that this isn't a problem and they're not testosterone jockeys. The other thing to do is you need to clean the area very well with special cleaners that actually break down the ammonia and the proteins. Otherwise, they'll just keep remarking. The other thing is to not let them have the run of the house so that they're not doing it out of your sight. But the best one is, if at all possible, make sure you spray and neuter your dogs and make sure that you don't have a little mini war going on between the dogs for who gets to be the king of the castle. There can only be one king or queen, and that should be you.
Great. Now, another person writes in, my female husky likes to jump on the back of kids, and hope I can say this on air, Robert, hump. This is a dog channel. Is this for dominance, and how do I stop her?
It is partly about dominance, but it's also about being excited. And excited does not necessarily have to speak to sexual arousal. This can just be excitement level. So it happens when kids play with dogs. The dog gets excited. Everybody's running around. The kids are squealing. The more excited the dog gets, the more excited the behaviors get. And this is where you can see this excited humping behavior start. What you can do is talk to the kids about how they play with the dog. Do not, especially with younger dogs, don't get them so excited. Don't get them so revved up, and then this isn't going to be a problem. The other thing that you can do is call a halt to the game before it hits that, goes off the chart in excitement. Allow everybody to calm down. This is a great time to work on place. Go lie down, go chew a bone, calm down a little bit, and then you can play again. And yes, the excitement level will climb, but then you can just call a halt to it again. The other thing that you can do is include your children in on the obedience training when it comes to the dog, so the dog doesn't look at them as a lower social ranking being.
Okay. Now, another question says, my one husky can get a bit snappy, never around food, but just when she's been sleeping or curled up. You can't even reach down to pet her. She'll fire off a bite in the air, teeth bare, growling, and has clamped down on her hands briefly. She quickly seems to be sorry and then is back to her normal, friendly self, but then can repeat this attitude again.
Without seeing the dog doing the behavior, this can be one of two things. This can be resource guarding of a sleeping place. Now, this is a problem when they are on a couch or in a hallway and they're sleeping and they won't let you by because they're sleeping. That's a problem because that's resource guarding. If they're in their own bed or their own crate and somebody reaches in and wakes them up and they do that, that's not resource guarding. That's, you're now disturbing a dog who's sleeping, and that's not a very good thing to do. So if they're in their own beds, don't touch them. They have a right to be there. If they're sleeping on the couch and won't let you sit down because that's where they're sleeping, that's resource guarding, and that is a problem. That means the dog sees this as its property, and no dog should actually be allowed to own anything. The only person who owns anything is you, and you let the dog use it.
Right. Now we have about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to do a last question. What is the best way to introduce a new husky or a Malamute into an already established pack family? On neutral ground away from the house, or can I bring him right into the home?
No, hopefully the people will have done some research as to make sure that the dogs are compatible energies to begin with. Most people don't give any thought to the energy that they're bringing in. It has to be of a lower energy than your existing huskies, or you're going to be living in a war zone. But providing that you've done that, the dog is now here, you're ready to put them together, no, you shouldn't bring them straight into the house. I always take them outside on neutral territory. This is a great time to actually take them both for a walk, one on either side of you. Start walking so that you can actually start with the group activity of we are a pack. And then when you do bring them into the house, know what you're getting into. Keep sleeping places, eating places, toys, high-value chew toys. Make sure that you keep them separate, and you have to keep an eye on them. The dog shouldn't be together unsupervised for quite a while, and know to expect something called a honeymoon period. And it happens usually after about 3 weeks when the new dog's behavior suddenly changes, and they go from being sweet little dog to, oh, my God, I got Cujo on my hands. What the heck happened? It's called a honeymoon period.
And I know we're running out of time, and I wanted to just ask you quickly, Huskies and Malamutes are showing up on dangerous dog lists and becoming part of this breed-specific legislation, or BSL.
Yep.
What can we do to change this mentality?
What we can do is be responsible owners, making sure that our dogs are socialized and well-trained and in control at all times. We can't change the public's perception if our own dogs are not in control. The other thing that we can do is make sure that we are not the ones who are supporting puppy mills and hack backyard breeders who are producing poor quality dogs. Basically, temperament is 50% nature, 50% nurture. If you have a dog who is unstable and neurologically not sound, this dog is going to be unstable, and basically it gives people a chance to say, see, look, I told you, these dogs are out of control. Don't support these people. Don't buy dogs unseen. Get your dogs from good breeders, and then do your work, and then produce good ambassadors for the breed.
Wonderful. Well, it's time for class to be dismissed. And, Margaret, thank you so much for joining us here today on the Five Vibe and sharing your great tips and tools for living with Northern Breed dogs. I could talk to you for hours, and I didn't even get a chance to get Robert in here, but I just want to make sure our listeners know to head over to your website for a lot more information, and that would be www.snowdog.guru. And, Robert, anything before we say goodbye?
Nope. A great show as always. Thank you, ladies, and we'll talk again soon.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Margaret. Bye-bye, Robert.
Bye-bye.
See you guys next time. Goodbye.